Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Darren.
Hi, I'm Darren. I'm an alcoholic.
Better?
Yeah, thank you. I was asked earlier today what kind of a catchphrase I could use to let people know what kept me coming back, and I just have to say it was a fellowship. You know, people sticking their hand out and giving me hugs and, telling me I'm welcome there. That's what kept me coming back. And what it was like when I was out there drinking. And it started out with just the weekends, and then the weekends turned into Mondays, and then it was just all week long. And then I started hanging around with some people that they were like doing cross tops and black beauties and stuff like that, and then Crank came along after that. But there was always that alcohol. It was always on my shoulder too. And I can't say that it was always bad. Most of the time it was good. I had a lot of fun. But then the fun started coming into trouble, and then it got to the point where I didn't even know what day of the week it was there towards the end. My boss, they would be calling me up wanting to know if I was going to come to work, and I was thinking it was Sunday. And they go, no, it's Wednesday. And are you going to come in? Yeah, give me a little bit of time. And I was always showing up to work a little bit late. And it got to the point where my phone was disconnected, so then they started kicking in the doors. And I remember one morning I heard the back door crash open, and I kind of like turned around, and my dad and my boss was standing there looking at me. And the look on my dad's face was like, and he just turned around, walked off. That always just sticks with me. And, because my dad and my parents, they always gave us kids what we wanted. You know, we never starved, or we never did not have any clothes, and we had all the toys that we'd ever wanted. And for me, that still wasn't enough, and I was chasing the bottle. And just started hanging out with some friends that liked to do the stuff that I did. And before I knew it, it was just nothing. I didn't have nothing. I had a house. It was my mom and dad's house, and they didn't let me stay there rent-free, but I still never had any money. I had a full-time job, probably making about $1,100 a week, or every 2 weeks, and I never could pay the electric bill, never could pay the phone bill. It was just a mess. I remember one time I was out, I worked for a farm management, and we were spraying at nighttime, and somebody had dumped off some mattresses, and so I picked them up and got them out of the way, and out from underneath one of them came a little puppy, and I took it home, and I raised it. And I remember one night I was sitting there on the couch smoking a cigarette, and the last thing I remember was waking up. I don't know if it was the day afterwards or what, but I saw this big old burn mark in the couch, and I looked down on the ground, and that cigarette was being chewed up by that little dog. So I just tell you that God does work miracles. There was a lot of times I didn't know how I made it home. Sometimes when I would drive myself home, this is when I was living with my mom and dad. I don't know how, but I'd make it home. But then I'd wake up the next morning with my dad tapping on the window. Crazy kid, you trying to kill yourself? But did that stop me? Nah. I didn't really know how to say no, because I was always saying, yeah, I'll try that. I'll do that. And No. There towards the end, my bosses, they took my company truck in to have it painted. And they found some stuff in the front seat of it. And, you know, they confronted me about it. And I told them, this, not mine. Somebody else put it there. You know, they just laughed at me. They said, Darren, you take that truck home with you at nighttime. You drive it during work all day. And you're sitting there telling me that somebody else put it in there? And I say, well, that's the only thing I can say. And, you know, and they told me, we're going to take you in and have you tested. If you test positive, we're going to fire you. You know, and my dad worked for their dad, you know, and they're pretty close to being family. And I guess I had a moment of clarity then. And I confessed that, you know, it was mine, and they let me get into treatment. And did the treatment over there at Mill Creek. I don't even know if it's still around or not. But I did that. I did all the aftercare. I started going to the meetings and stuff. You know, I had a card I had to sign to show that I did go to the meetings and stuff. You know, I thank my higher power for them intervening on me, you know, because I keep looking back at my life and I just wonder what it would have been like if I would have still been out there. And I don't think it would have been very pretty. You know, and as soon as I got a little bit of clean time, I started making amends to my bosses and everything, because I stole a lot of Roundup from them. It was readily available. There's been a few times where I took the tags off of their company truck and put them on my personal vehicle. I had to make amends to myself, too, for letting my life get so out of control. And then I remember when I confronted my mom and dad about it. You know, my dad was outside working, and he saw me pull up, and he goes, what'd you do, get fired? And I said, no, Dad, questioned me about some stuff that I was doing at work, and they want me to get into a treatment facility. And he just kind of looked at me and he goes, well, what do you want me to do about it? And I was like, nothing, Dad, I just want your support. And he said, okay, you got it. You know, no. My dad and I, we've been always pretty close. He's been a good big part of my life, and so is my mom. I try not to get too emotional, but that's just the way I am. I kept taking people's suggestions, and they kept telling me to keep coming back. Get a sponsor, work the steps, and give it 90 days. And if you don't like it, you can leave, and the misery will be right there at the door waiting for you. And I started doing that, and I kept coming back, and my life started getting better slowly. You know, I think I had about a year clean and sober, and I was needing a vehicle real bad because the one I had, the key for the ignition was a screwdriver. And I think it had a driver window and a windshield, and it had a back window, but all the other ones are gone. I paid like $300 for it. And when I first started coming into the program, I was ashamed to drive it, though. But when I was out there drinking and stuff, it got me from point A to point B. And it just so happens that my brother had a Jeep Cherokee that he was selling. And I talked to him about it, and he let me make payments on it. And I got it paid for. And just seemed like after that, things just started falling into place, you know. My life got a whole lot better. When I went into the treatment facility, they weighed me in at 138 pounds. I think I put on 50 while I was there. And, you know, I remember when I was still drinking and stuff, and I'd always go over to my mom and dad's and for dinner, and there'd be so many times where I'd have to force myself to eat just to make it look like I didn't have a problem. But I kind of knew that they knew. But, you know, I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to live that way anymore. I know one of the bigger parts of my sobriety is going to conventions. If anybody has never been to a convention, you probably should go. Because the energy that you feel in those rooms is like, I don't know, it's kind of like a high. And it was a good feeling. And thing about it was nobody fought. There was no harsh words said to anybody. All there was hugging and telling everybody that we're glad to see you and glad to meet you. And, you know, I've been to quite a few conventions, and I've never been to a bad one. You know, they've always been good. I've made mistakes in recovery. You know, I was back to the part where I couldn't say no. I had a girlfriend one time, and we talked ourselves into moving down south. And I was down there about 6 months, and I was calling my sister, come and get me. Because, you know, coming from a small town of Lindsay, going down to Tustin was like culture shock for me. So my sister came down south and picked me up, and we loaded all the stuff we could in the back of a trailer, and I put a ramp from her trailer up into the back of her truck so I could ride my bike up into there, and then we just started packing furniture and stuff all the way around it. And I remember the trip home. I cried almost all the way home. And my little nephew, he kept patting me on the shoulder. It's going to be okay, Uncle Darren. Sometimes I think these emotions are a curse for me. But, I made it home. The people that I worked for, they let me come back to work. I think I worked for them 16 years. And then
I saw an ad in the paper for water systems operator for an irrigation district, and I applied for it, and then I got it. It was kind of hard leaving that job because all the good things that they did for me and the things that they let me do. But they understood, and they said, you know, we would love to have you stay, but we just can't match what they're going to give you. And you know, I never thought I'd have a job like that. You know, it's a public agency for the state of California, and I got good retirement benefits. I get a company truck that I take home. And I don't have to worry about taking tags off it because there are California exempt plates on it. So, you know, and I don't know. This life has been so good, you know. And, I think I had about... I think it was 11 years sober. The wife that I had at the time. The wife I had at that time, you know, we were having a lot of disagreements, a lot of arguments, and we were trying to work it out, but it just wasn't happening. I remember one time we were sitting in the living room and I was watching TV. I got a call from my dad. Napkins in there? I got some. Thank you. Try to get through this without crying too much. I got a call from my dad. I don't know why I can never do this without crying. He said that your sister has been killed in a horse riding accident. She was my younger sister. She was the one that came down to get me down south. She came and visited me in the treatment facility. And she always asked me if there was anything I needed. And most of the time it was a pack of cigarettes. You know, and that was just a hard thing to do, you know, but I made it through that. Shortly after her funeral, my wife and I decided to get a divorce. That was probably about a year or so after we buried my sister. You know, but through all of that, the loving kindness that people in the fellowship gave me. I didn't have to drink. I didn't have to hide the pain. I didn't have to take any drugs or anything to stop the pain from happening. You know, as I was able to feel it, go through it, and like to think that I got a little bit stronger out of it. Um You know, I was I stayed single for quite a few years after that divorce, and I was thinking that you know, that was all right with me. You know, I don't need anybody in my life, and God had other plans for me. And I met my wife today, and thing that lets me know that God is alive and well is I went on a dating site, seniorpeoplemeet.com. She was on ourtime.com, two different sites. She'd been on hers for about a month or so, and she got fed up with it. She goes, I'm gonna turn this thing off. And her daughter-in-law said, no, wait till the end of the month. Wait till the end of the month. My profile popped up on her site. So we emailed each other for a little while, and then we exchanged phone numbers, and then we met, and then we've been together ever since. We'll be married in June. It'll be 3 years. Now I know what a good marriage is supposed to be like. And it's all because Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, they went out of their way to show me how to live a better life without having to drink. You know, when I was early in recovery, I was I did a lot of service positions. You know, I was treasurer for meetings, secretaries. And I started getting in the area service. I was vice chair and then chair for a couple of years. And, you know, all of that just made me feel useful, you know, and made me feel good about myself. And I started getting a lot of self-respect back. And people were always asking me what I thought of things. And I was just like, you're asking me? I don't know. But I don't know. I just love the way life is today. I get really nervous when I'm up here in a podium, but I'm just trying to do the best that I can, and so that people know that it does work. January 21st, I celebrated 23 years. And that's all because of the people in this fellowship and people that are new. Keep coming back, you know. Start getting yourself back. And you know, just be of service. You know, if that goes to making coffee or cleaning up after meetings, putting the chairs and tables away, you know, all of that stuff will, you know, it'll make you grow like you've never been before. And I'd like to thank them for asking me to come and speak tonight. And with that, I think I'm about done. Thank you.